Hello and welcome back to the Millennial Ag Podcast, where agriculture is always on tap and no topic is off limits. Thanks for joining us today, your co-hosts, Valene Cawhorn and Catherine Lotsbeach.
Hey guys, welcome to this week's episode. I am super, super excited to introduce you to our guest for this week. He is long overdue on our show, but I promise you he was more than worth waiting for. You guys know that we talk a lot about FFA. We've had lots and lots of FFA student guests on our show. And, you know, we're really, really supportive. It's near and dear to our hearts. Valene is working really hard to get an FFA program up and running in her community. And there's always the age-old question in agriculture, on Millennial Ag, wherever you talk about it, of how do we get young people more interested and involved in production agriculture? And finally, we are bringing someone to the show who should have been here a really long time ago, an ag teacher and my husband, Jimmy Lotsbeach. So Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We are really, really glad that you're finally here. And my humble apologies for it taking so long, but you know, we finally know what we're doing after 6 years, so it should be a pretty smooth ride.
Yeah, it only took six or so years to get me on. I'm a really busy guy, so that makes sense. You know, no, I teased that you were really digging at the bottom of the barrel when you brought me on, so...
Well, you've had lots of time to listen in and see which guests are really good and which ones are, so you'll be a pro now.
Yeah. I'll see if I can stand up to some of the better ones. Huh?
Well, we have great faith. So, like I said at the beginning, it's always a question in agriculture and how do we get young people involved, stay involved? How do we get them, you know, into production ag when they don't come from that kind of a background? And Jimmy, you've been a teacher for, how long have you been teaching? 14?
12 years.
Oh.
Yep.
Wow. So 12 years, you're, you know, headed towards mid-career. You've mentored a lot of students. You've taught a lot of students. You've been in three different ag programs and you've seen a lot of different things come and go. And especially now with the rise of technology and AI and all of those sorts of things that are changing the landscape of not just the industry, but our lives. Interested to hear what you have to say on how young people need to be guided and taught and supported to be able to succeed in this crazy industry. So why don't we start out with just a little bit of your background and your history in teaching?
Okay. So I'm taught for 12 years. I teach here in Colorado at a little school called Platte Valley High School in Kersey, Colorado. I've been here for 8 years, going on my ninth year at Platte Valley. And I also taught for a couple of years at a school called Weld Central in Colorado, and then for 2 years in Utah before Catherine and I got married and moved here to Colorado. I teach pretty much every subject possible except for floriculture. I could teach it, I think. I would not be very good at it, but I could teach it. But
fun fact about floriculture and Jimmy was our wedding invitations had ribbons tied on them. He tied the prettiest bows.
Yeah, I tie a mean bow. I can't tell you how to make a good floral arrangement. I know the difference between a good-looking floral arrangement and a bad-looking one. I don't know how to make a good one, but I do tie a mean bow.
He does tie a good bow.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I've taught, probably over 15 different subjects or classes taught throughout the time. Teach a lot of ag mechanics and welding, animal science, ag business, and a little bit of plant science and soil science. And that's pretty much what I do the majority of right now. So
why don't you tell us from the beginning of your career till now, what needs have evolved for students that are not being met in terms of how they are prepared for careers?
So across 10 years or so, 12 years, I guess, of teaching. In the beginning, you know, there was a lot of stuff that was like, good teaching is you have a PowerPoint and you have a note sheet and you go through this PowerPoint and they fill out a note sheet and then you do a quiz at the end and maybe have some sort of activity. And that's what good teaching was, right? And not to say that that still can't be good teaching, but nowadays, like, you know, everything that's on the PowerPoint is Googleable, right? Like you can Google that and you probably still could 12 years ago, but it was a little bit harder to find. And so like, I think the big difference and the big thing, and I don't know that it's necessarily like kids need to know this because they've already figured it out, but like teachers and education and things have to catch up. It's like, how are we teaching things that can't be Googled, right? How do we teach the skills needed and the problem solving and those kind of things that are needed to be successful that when we previously were just in the mindset of we need to teach you facts to be successful. And I mean, all of us have, you know, a supercomputer that we carry around in our pocket nowadays. And so it's like, if I don't really need to know the facts are available at my fingertip. I don't, you know, maybe need to know how to search them up, but more so like I need to know, how do I get to the correct resource, right? Like misinformation and all that stuff. I know you guys have done tons of podcasts on that, but like there's so much out there that's just crap. How do you sort through all the crap to find the stuff that actually is going to get you to a quality answer, I think is a big part of what we need to evolve and what we need to do in education. Another thing that I think is like, we need to be teaching kids skills that AI can't replicate, right? Like back in the day, I remember when I was in probably middle school, we learned typing, right? And you learned how to, you'd take like a spreadsheet of information, you had to put that into an Excel document, and computers and artificial intelligence and things like that's literally what they're built for, right? Is to take those tasks that people are probably going to be super slow or screw up or any of those things. And a computer can do it in a, you know, a half a second, but there are still a lot of skills and a lot of jobs and a lot of things in demand that AI can't replace, right? Like, I mean, you think about all the stuff that Mike Rowe does when he talks about like career and technical education and that kind of stuff, right? Like there are a lot of in-demand trades jobs that people are aging out of, and AI is not going to come and fix your toilet, and AI is not going to come wire the electricity into your new building, or change the oil on your car.
Fix the furnace when it blows
up. Fix the furnace when it blows up. You know, change the oil in your car and your tractor and all those kind of things, right? Like, so there's a lot of those, but not everyone wants to go into a trades job or those kind of things. I think where kind of the interesting thing is like AI is this really cool like idea generator. Like that's what I use AI for a lot right now is I'm like, I need some ideas on this topic. And AI is like, here's 12 ideas. And I'm like, oh, cool. That would have taken me 2 hours to come up with that. But it still doesn't tell you like the human experience of it, right? Like, and so that's another area where like the students have to learn to understand humans and to, you know, to have those skills to be able to communicate and to work with people, because AI can come up with a million ideas and throw something at the wall to see what sticks. But the human connection is what can kind of bridge that gap of like, okay, here's 12 ideas that they gave me, but I know these top six won't work in this scenario because of this, you know. And I guess I'm kind of thinking more in like the ag business perspective of things, and like, why are people still necessary, you know, when you have artificial intelligence? And I see it as that, is that human connection is still going to be probably even more so important, because we're just going to get to the point where you're interacting more and more with machines on a daily basis.
Well, and I think one thing that's changed is, you know, 10, 12 years ago, we had to pick up the phone and call, because text messaging, you got charged per text message too, you know, and people were just learning how to email, or, you know, consistently with email. And nowadays, cattle buyers are texting you prices and so that sort of thing, you know, versus that old fashioned phone call. And we're lonelier too than we've ever been, even though we have more, you know, artificial connection than ever. So I think education's changing, but we have to continue to teach those soft skills of communication. Are you seeing, you know, as students graduate and head into the workforce, a shift in some of that, you know, and the soft skills or being able to go job interview, you know, that segment?
Yeah. And I guess I don't really like the term soft skills, because it implies that like they're less important, right? And in all reality, they're probably more important than the hard skills or the technical skills that we're teaching, because, you know, I think of probably anything that I teach a kid is probably 5 years out of date, right? By the time they graduate, like it's, the industry is 5 years ahead, at least 5 years ahead of anything that I'm teaching a kid at that point in time, generally. But these soft skills, or, you know, there's lots of buzzwords, 21st century skills, whatever it is you want to call it, they are probably the most important thing that we're teaching. They're also probably the hardest thing to measure, right? And so that's where, I think they, people like to differentiate. And in education, we like to have data and validate and everything like that. But like, you know, you need to be able to communicate both in person, man, over the phone is something, I mean, it's something that I still kind of get anxious about. And I don't love to do is call up somebody that I don't know. But like, you have a 15-year-old kid be like, hey, guess what? You need to give this person a call on the phone. And they go, like deer in the headlights. They are just freaked out when that happens. So communication is huge, and communicating in a way that you can communicate with your peers, right? And kids are really, really good at this peer-to-peer communication. But what they struggle with is, how do you communicate with an older adult? And generally, those older adults are going to be your bosses and things when you first graduate. And so, yeah, putting a period at the end of a sentence in a text, or capitalizing a letter, or those kind of things are something that basically doesn't ever happen when kids are communicating to each other. And so it's like, yeah, the boomers and even now it's the millennials. Yeah, the millennials are, they still need those kind of things. And that's important. And again, like the critical thinking, right? How do we take the information that's all, you know, at our fingertips, more and more information available, and how do we sift through and figure out what's the crap and what's not? And if I can get a kid to learn that it's okay to look past the first two links that Google shows when they search something, and to actually click on a link, that one's even more important, because a lot of times they just read the little AI three sentence blurb that Google comes up with at the beginning of when you search. But like, how to read through those and differentiate and to sort through things that way, I think is really important. How to develop responsibility, obviously, like showing up. I talk to a lot of people who employ, you know, people in agriculture, whether it's high school kids or adults or anything like that. And most of the time they say, you know what, the number one skill we need kids to have, show up. And if you can be on time, that's even better, but at least show up to your job, because too many people just don't do that. And so those are some of the things that I think are most valuable that we are teaching. But again, they're kind of the harder things to measure. And so it's pretty tough to figure out if you actually made like a significant difference in that.
It's a little bit of a tangent, but in your office or in your classroom, I can't remember where it's hung up, but you've got a poster that said, you know, 10 things that take zero talent, but will make you stand out, you know, as a student, as an employee or anything. And number one is show up on time, you know, bring a good attitude. Just, I know you don't like soft skills, but those things that aren't measurable that just are really, really, really important. And like you say, you're making people stand out these days versus can you type?
Right. I think that's what agricultural education and FFA and 4-H and these programs have going for them more than anything else, is like, you look through, even in career and technical education, there's probably 20 or 30 different programs that you can take in CTE. But like, are they teaching all of those things? And some of them are doing a really good job. I'm not bashing on the other ones, but like, I think that's something that at least the good programs are really harping on and really trying to make it well known, and to just, sometimes with kids, you just gotta drive it into their skull multiple times over and over and over again. And you know, they may not respond to you while they're there, but a lot of times after they get out in the real world or they graduate or something, they're like, oh, click. There's a little switch in their brain that clicks, and they kind of figure that out. And I think that's something that agriculture does a really good job of, is we're able to teach those skills without having to like make it artificial, right? Like, we can teach those just through our normal day-to-day, like, this is how we operate.
And I think that's really cool. And one of the things about ag is the work ethic. You know, when we're hiring, if people have ag on their resume, hiring at AgPro, if they have ag on their resume, they jump to the top of the list regardless of the position a lot of times, simply because people that have been out moving cows in a tractor, tilling the soil, those kinds of things, know how to put in the extra hours in a day to get things done. Whereas sometimes students don't necessarily, and that's a big generalization, but something I've noticed just in the interview process.
Yeah. I've read a whole bunch of stuff about raising kids, because we've got two little kids. And one of the things that I've seen several times, and I've never actually like gone and verified the research, so I'll just put that out there. But one of the things that it talks about is like, one of the highest predictors of, you know, quote, productivity in adulthood is kids having chores. Like, that's one of the highest predictors of a kid being, you know, a productive adult, is them having chores when they were a kid. And so many kids just aren't doing that nowadays, right? Like, they don't have to take out the garbage. They don't have to feed the dog. They don't have to help cook dinner and clean up and those kind of things. Like, they're allowed to just veg Or, you know, I think sometimes, like, even the kids who aren't vegging, right? But the ones who are like all sports all the time, right? And it's like mom and dad and everybody, grandma and grandpa or whoever else it is, picks up everything else. And they're just like, no, you just rest. No, give that kid something to do. Give them some responsibility, right? That's not just a sport or something else that they're doing as well, because those things at some point, that sport's going to run out, right? Like, it's going to end in their life no matter what. Even if you make it onto the professional league or whatever, at some point it's going to end. And like, you have to have some other skills in your life to be able to keep on going.
And injuries can happen too. Like, how many times do you see a college athlete, you know, in their freshman year that put all their eggs in one basket and doesn't know how to study and they have a broken leg? Like, sorry, but
generally don't end up as a college athlete for very long. Yeah.
At Peacock Technology, we're transforming dairy farming with robotics and AI.
Our pre-brush and post-spray robots work on rotary milking parlors to ensure consistent udder hygiene, alleviating labor shortages, and maintaining high standards year-round.
Our advanced vision system and online platform integrates data from wearables and body condition scores, giving farmers a complete view of each cow's health and performance, saving time and cost while boosting efficiency and profitability.
Peacock Technology, empowering better decisions for your herd's well-being and productivity. Visit peacocktechnology.com to learn more.
You know, we've talked a lot about the things that kids need nowadays, and it's, I mean, I know critical thinking, show up on time, have a work ethic. Val said that the experience in agriculture, you know, makes a resume jump to the top when you're applying for something in agriculture. But what about, you know, first that brings up the question of what about for kids who don't come from ag, who want to get into specifically production ag? So there's that question number one. And, you know, we talk about that all the time in agriculture for a myriad of reasons that we're all mostly familiar with. So how can we support that? And then also, are there new and different ways of engaging kids? You know, like, we go to all the National FFA Convention and 4-H seminars and all the things that we go to, and there's always a trade show, right? And you can stop by, you can get some cool swag. But is there something more meaningful, more hands-on? You know, are there other ways that we could get young people involved, you know, opportunities to really drive home some of these experiences?
Yeah. You know, I kind of say a little bit facetiously generally in most of my classes that I'm like, if you want to be in production ag, you either have to be born in it, marry into it, or, you know, be independently wealthy.
I mean, you're not wrong. It is facetious, but you're also not wrong. Unfortunately,
right.
That's the reality right now.
Right. But I guess another thing that you have to think about is like, agriculture is, depending on the statistic you see, it's between 18 and 20 million jobs that support agriculture, but only like 1.6 million of those are production ag. And so there's a lot of industries, a lot of things that are ag supporting industries that I think we need to be kind of championing those. Not to say that production ag is a bad thing, but just it's really, really dang hard to get into production ag if you aren't born into it, right? And so I think we need to, you know, we need to champion some of those other industries that are supporting agriculture and rural communities and those kind of things. But I would say, like, in terms of actually getting into production ag, like, there needs to be a bridge where it's built and we meet somewhere in the middle from the people who are in the ag space and don't have that succession plan or that person who's going to take over, and the younger generation. And probably it needs to start sometime at the high school level, but it needs to go beyond that into the college and that space as well. Because I know a lot of people think they know what they're doing in high school, and then you end up doing something completely different. You know, I was one of those people.
We can all attest to that.
Right. But high school, I think, is the great area of like showing them opportunities and showing them things that are available. You know, the cool thing about working with high school kids is like, everything is available to them, right? Like, generally they aren't pigeonholed into one area, so they can look at everything with a, you know, this eyes wide open view and just be like, maybe that's cool, maybe it's not. But I don't know, to get more people into the ag sector, I mean, I think it's probably a lot of different things, right? Like, it's probably getting some sort of, I think, internships. I don't know if I like the word of internship or not, because a lot of times internships are just like, here's 2 weeks on this and 2 weeks on this. And you don't really ever get to know a whole lot about anything, especially in a very short amount of time. But like, so our high school does And they do it through several different things. But like through ag, we're able to do work-based learning where kids go out and they're able to actually work for an agriculture producer or an ag business of some sort and get high school credit while they're not ever sitting in our classroom or anything for that credit, but they're actually out working and doing some of those kind of things. And I think that's an area of like, maybe we need to be a lot more directed in terms of like these people who need this plan or who need these employees and this kind of thing. Like we need to figure out a way to kind of link up together and make some opportunities that maybe it's the ag teacher, maybe it's a counselor, maybe it's somebody else who's like, hey, I think we've got this opportunity and I think you would be really good at this. And you push that kid out and it basically make it, the big thing is I think it's got to be 100% non-committal for the student, meaning like they are not committed to, you know, beyond maybe a semester's worth of time or something like that. It's not like you have to decide on this job right away, right? Because I know I was actually talking to a student at the beginning of the summer and she's like, I wanted to be a radiologist. She's like, I wanted to be a radiologist. And then I went and I did a job shadow and it was so boring. And I'm like, yeah, that's like, some people think that way, right? Like you stare at a screen and you tap some buttons and say, I don't know, get in the tube or whatever it is. And then, you know, sit still and then you take the things off and you hand it to somebody else. And that's what you do the majority of the day. And I'm generalizing that, but it's got to be that area of like, I can dip my toe in the water, but not have any sort of commitment beyond, you know, again, maybe a short time frame of a semester or something like that. Because kids these days, I think, are really afraid of committing to something knowing that, like, I'm not going to like it. You know, a lot of people themselves, I think the average thing they say is the average person nowadays will go through 10 different jobs, right? And so a lot of people don't want to commit to something, right? And they don't want to be tied to a single job or a single area. And I think kids who see their parents doing that are seeing the same thing. And so it's like make things really low risk and low risk for both parties, right? Like you don't want to make it high risk for the producers or the ag business or anything like that, but make it really low risk, but also make it meaningful work. So the other thing I think that is kind of hurting the industry is like generally if you get hired on, you know, let's say you're 14 or 15 years old and you get hired on with somebody, it's like, hey, guess what? You get to go sweep the shop. You get to go take the garbage out. You get to go weed whack the fence line. I saw a kid of mine out working yesterday, actually, and he was out weed whacking in like 100-degree weather, a row of irrigating tubes. And so he's out there with a weed whacker and I'm like, that looks like it sucks. But he's getting work experience and he's willing to do it and move up. But I'm like, you need to give these kids at least somewhat meaningful work. And because if it's all just this menial labor kind of crap work that nobody wants to do, then odds are they're going to give you crap effort or they're just not going to stick with it.
Hi, I'm Tom Herron, founder of Ag Professionals. Agriculture is always innovating and evolving, and at Ag Professionals, we provide the expertise to help you stay ahead. From land use planning and environmental compliance, permitting to real estate, civil and environmental engineering and land surveying, we offer one-stop solutions you need to grow and succeed. We're proud to support the Millennial Ag Podcast because we believe in the future of agriculture. Let's build that future together. Visit our website, agpros.com, to learn how we can help your operation thrive.
I have a lot of thoughts, and I really appreciate that approach. The hard thing with production ag is we do need commitment, right? Like if you're going to buy land or you're going to, you know, you have an old 60-year-old man that's getting ready to retire. He doesn't have any kids coming back, that sort of thing. And he's open enough to try to transition, you know, outside of his normal succession plan. He's got to have some buy-in that those guys, that his legacy can live on too. You know, and so encouraging kids too, to once they get in there, be able to continue to show up even when it's hard work, you know, and push that commitment too is important because there's days I know John and I both want to throw in the towel when the cows are out and we're calving. And, you know, even as owners, operators, we still have shit days where we're cleaning the barns and stuff. So it's, I don't know, it's a balance between some of that. And I would love to know your thoughts because we've got an old population in ag right now, like on average, an older population in ag. and the next generation's not coming up. And so trying to, you know, bridge the gap to keep family farms relatively mid-size rather than continue to consolidate, which consolidation isn't necessarily a bad thing, but how do we keep more people in production ag?
Yeah, I guess what I see is, again, at the younger level, make it to where these experiences are this non-committal type, right? Now, when it comes down to like, okay, yes, if you're writing a check to buy into land or whatever it is, yeah, you need to be pretty committed at that point in time. But hopefully you have 4, 5, 6, maybe more years of like, I understand, I've been mentored by these people, right? I think that's another big thing is like, I think there's a lot of people in production ag who are like, you know, I need to keep it secret what I do, right? I don't want to tell people how I do things or why I do things and that way. And it's like, well, that's good for you probably. And it probably helps you maintain your little niche and be productive and successful, but it doesn't do anything for your future, right? Especially if your future is, you know, if you don't ever share that with anybody and you're just like, you got to learn from hard knocks because I learned from hard knocks. And it's like, well, yeah, and life will throw you plenty of hard knocks, whether or not somebody's willing to give you some advice and some help, no matter what, right? So I think it's like, it's that building block steps of things. And it's, again, it's like, it's giving those young kids like meaningful work to where they understand like, okay, this is really hard. I had a kid one time that he was able to do an internship with a cattle trader or like a commodity trader. And so he went out there and he was in high school. He was earning high school credit for it. He was a senior and he was out there interning with a commodity trader and they were even paying him. Like too many of these kind of things, it's like the experience is payment enough. No, that's a bunch of crap. Like we know that you're making money off of this. If you weren't making money, you wouldn't have an intern or something like that, right? Like you wouldn't be able to do any of that stuff. And so it's like, pay the people, you know, and again, you don't have to pay them $40 an hour, but I think the kid was making 17 or 18 bucks an hour and he was doing like meaningful work. Was it probably above his pay grade? Yeah, absolutely. But it got him interested in the topic. And he's like, this is something I could see myself doing. Anybody will learn the crap stuff that it's like, you can teach anybody how to muck out a barn pretty quick, right? But to understand commodities and trading, which is all way above my head, is stuff that, you know, that it takes a very specific skill set to do. And so it's like, before you commit to maybe 4 or 6 or 8 years of college for that kind of thing, it's like, you should have a pretty good idea of what you're getting yourself into. And I think there's just a lot of ag that's like, well, everything we do is kind of, you know, kind of proprietary and kind of secretive and that kind of thing. And it's like, is it really? Probably not. Like, because there's probably 100 other people who are doing the same thing as you. You just don't know it because you don't share it with anybody, right? And so that mindset of like, let's not be secretive about what we do and let's be opened up and do that. You know, the whole idea of consolidation is like, yeah, it's in some ways it kind of sucks. In some ways it's like some farmers and some operations, I don't know, this is probably not going to be very popular, but like some of them probably shouldn't be in business if they're still farming the way now today that they were 40 years ago, right? Like you probably shouldn't be in business for very long if you're not willing to improve and to, you know, to get better at what you have available, that kind of thing. But I do think the idea of the consolidation thing, what I see of like a positive in that is it provides a ton of jobs in that sector that you don't have to be, again, a millionaire to be involved in production agriculture, right? Like you can go be a worker or manager or a herd manager or whatever it is on one of these larger farms, probably get paid a pretty livable wage and not have to have invested, you know, your whole livelihood or several million dollars of, you know, yours or your parents or grandparents' money or whatever it is to actually be involved in that. So I guess I see some positive in the consolidation side. Not that like the monopoly thing is good, but I don't think we're to that point yet.
I think, I mean, there's a lot of really, really good points in there. And I think first and foremost, in my opinion, is that you should pay people for the work that they do if they're 17 or if they're 27, right? And I know when, I mean, my first internship in college, I got paid $10 an hour to work in 115 degree heat in the Central Valley of California for 3 months, right? Like, it sucked.
You got paid? Yeah. It's like that exactly. Meme, right? Yeah.
Exactly. I got paid to do it. And then my next two internships, I was paid more than twice that because I was working for a company that saw the value
of teaching me what they wanted me to know. So that with the intent of me, I mean, I did join their company after I graduated college, but they paid me. And I refused to take an unpaid internship because what the hell is the point? I mean, I need money to live and go to school and everything. And I mean, I'm giving you my time and yes, you're giving me experience, but we both have to get something out of it. And so paying people, especially young people, to learn what they are and are interested in, I think is getting to be less of an unpopular opinion, but it's definitely been prevalent, especially like you say, in agriculture, where we work hard and we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and, you know, you got to struggle to make it worth it. And when you're 60 years old, maybe you can take a vacation. It's crap, just like you say. And then, you know, having an opportunity to try out a lot of different things or even several different things without the commitment of, yes, I'm going to start working for a vet when I'm 14, and then I am damn sure going to college to be a vet when I'm 18, and you're going to go to 8 years of school. What if you don't like it? What if you don't like the sight of blood? It's perfectly okay. So give it a shot, right? It's kind of like dating.
Yeah.
I think date your career.
Right. Like, yeah, speed dating your career, right? Because you'll know pretty quick. I mean, whether or not you're interested or not of like, but again, you have to be doing meaningful work, right? If you're just sweeping the floor and, you know, filing papers into a file box or whatever it is, it's like, you don't actually really know what that job entails or what's going on.
Yeah. And then I really, really like what you say. Well, two things, the proprietary part in agriculture, like really what are trade secrets left in production agriculture, right? Like there's enough science and we know that there's art to agriculture, but what are the trade secrets left? And if you're keeping them, man, you've got a small and narrow worldview, because I run into that in my current role. And there's, you know, there's some producers out there who, you know, don't want to talk to you about their production practices or say you can't talk about this to anybody else that you're working with because they act like it's a zero sum game.
Right. It's that zero sum attitude of like, if I'm winning, then somebody else is losing. Well, that's not really true. You know, honestly, there's so few of us in production agriculture that it's like, if any of us are winning, well, number one, that's pretty awesome because there's a lot of times when nobody's winning. But if anybody's winning, then everybody can be winning because, you know, with how global everything is and what's going on, it's like, if you're willing to do the things it takes, like there's enough of the pie to go around, I think.
Yeah, exactly. There's room for everyone at the table, right?
And we've got to share ideas too. Like, you know, I think a lot of times we get really siloed into what we're doing and what we're doing within the four walls of our operation. But sometimes it's stepping back and saying, hey, what are you doing? This is what I'm doing, and bouncing ideas off people. Because if I know, like, if I'm working on something and I never talked to anybody, my ideas might be shit. Like, there might be some good things to them. But if I don't bounce them off of people and say, hey, we're going to try marketing cattle a little bit differently, or we're thinking about doing this, or we're going to switch up our vaccine program. And they say, don't do that, because when I did this, this is what happened. You know, it just makes us all better. And if we can learn from each other, we'll be leaps and bounds ahead of where we were. And yeah, it makes me frustrated when people are so narrow in on, and there's certain things, you know, sharing specifics on a balance sheet or, you know, certain things like that. Like, I totally understand some of that. But when it comes to general production practices and operations and programs and marketing strategies, we've got to be willing to talk and share those ideas. Because, you know, even your high school student, I know our high school student working for us, sometimes he has great ideas that we implement, you know, or like, this is when he wants to do things. And we're like, oh, that won't hurt anything. Go for it, you know, and giving people an opportunity to have a voice. We're saying, hey, that doesn't work, and this is why. This is based off our experience. And having those conversations, I think, is getting better, but I think it's still lacking.
Yeah. And I guess, so I like that idea that you talked about your high school kid. I guess the one other thing that I think I would add to this conversation that's meaningful is like giving young kids the opportunity to fail in small ways, where it's not like if you fail, then everything goes up in fire and that kind of stuff, right? But like they have an idea of, okay, this is how I think it should be done. And you say, okay, well, I don't agree with that, but I'm going to let you try it. And then if it works, great. You figured out a new way to do it. And if it doesn't, then you can come talk to me and we can work out, you know, maybe a better way to do that. But giving them that opportunity to fail with a parachute, right? Versus just like cutting the cords and being like, okay, good luck. See you later. I think that's really important, because that's where learning takes place, right? Is in failure and in making mistakes and that kind of stuff. Again, that idea of like opening up, you know, and I can see, again, not necessarily like opening up to the entire world and sharing everything on, you know, on the internet, But it's like, again, what you're doing is not super secret or that kind of thing, right? But you might have learned a really good thing that could benefit the entire industry, right? Like, there's a lot of things that could benefit the entire cattle industry that some people could share, but they're like, nope, it makes me the super special person in the industry. And it's like, well, yeah, it probably does, but at some point you're not going to be there. And so either you share it or it dies with you, and or odds are somebody else will figure it out on their own. It just might take a little bit longer.
I think that's, you know, great words of wisdom, and people, we need to be thinking outside the box too, because production ag is becoming more and more important, you know, every single day. But there's less and less people involved in actual production ag. So these conversations, I think, need to be had at all sorts of levels. Jimmy, it's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on, and I'm glad this is well overdue. So anything else you want to leave listeners with, any words of wisdom, and then, you know, plug your FFA chapter too, and anything you want plugged there too.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I've got a lot of opinions, most of them not good, but I got a lot of opinions on things. So I appreciate you having me on and being able to share a little bit. I guess my biggest thing is, like, when I work with kids every day, and like, kids are goofballs and they're knuckleheads and they drive you crazy, but they're also like really, really fun to work with and really inspiring. And again, like, the world is 100% open to them, and they just have a, you know, see things with that kind of different view than somebody who's, you know, who's beyond that stage of life. And so I'm like, just don't be afraid to give a kid an opportunity. Maybe not every kid needs that opportunity, and, you know, you can be selective in who you do, but like, give a kid an opportunity if they show themselves, you know, worthy of it. And the worst that can happen is they fail on you, and you say, well, lesson learned, we won't do that again, right? But I guess that would be the biggest thing, is just like, don't be afraid to give kids opportunities, because a lot of times they will rise to whatever expectations that you have for them. And yeah, I guess I would say that, thank you for having me on. I don't know that anything, you know, I do is like super life-changing or anything in our chapter, but we're the Platte Valley High School FFA, an ag department in Kersey, Colorado. And you can probably follow us on Facebook if you're interested in that kind of thing. If you live in the Colorado and adjoining states, we host the Little American Royal Livestock and Horse Show every May, which is, we claim it. I don't know that we've ever actually done the research, but we claim that it's the largest spring youth livestock show in the country. The coolest thing about it is it's put on entirely by FFA members. So our high school students set it up and put it on, and it's in our middle school. Like, we set up panels inside the middle school and show on the field and inside the middle school, which I think is probably, we're probably the only school that ever does that. So just something that's cool there that our students do. And again, thank you for having me on, and hopefully, I don't know, something was decent that came out of this.
Before we sign off, I have to say that you might not think what you and your teaching partner do every day is life-changing, but having been an FFA member, having had some extraordinary advisors, and having promised never to marry an FFA teacher, because I'm a liar, I have to say that watching it from this end of life and seeing what you do every day with kids is truly life-changing, because you give them opportunities to fail safely. You give them opportunities to try stuff out amongst your classes, amongst the insane number of events that you guys put on every single year. And, you know, ag teachers put in a lot of hours and a lot of work all year round. Ag teachers have summer contracts. They don't really get much of a summer. And the commitment and the love that you have to help prepare your students to be their absolute best selves, no matter where they decide to go, is nothing short of amazing to watch. And there's plenty of hard times and stress throughout the year when things are busy, because things are always busy in FFA. But these kinds of perspectives and conversations need to be had starting at this level. And I can't think of a better place for it to come than the people who work with these students every single day, get to know them, and know, you know, the opportunities that are out there, and want to prepare them for that. So I've really enjoyed having you on the show finally. And thank you. Thank you for agreeing to come on. And there is no doubt that we will have you back.
Thank you for tuning into this week's episode of the Millennial Ag Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with your friends and like, subscribe, and review to our podcast. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, or email us at talktous@millennialag.com. Until next week, we are Millennial Ag.